Hey, yo, we about to tear it up. Yo,
break for break, break for break it down.
This right here is how we do it. Break it down.
It's the Breaking Atoms podcast. We break things down to the very last compound. My name is Sumit, a.k.a. the Potty Mouth of the South.
And my name is Chris Mitchell, a.k.a. the Actual Factual.
So we have a legend on the podcast today.
As we do.
As we do. Bucket list. You won't find many podcasts speaking to our guest, but we have the Actual Factual in our pocket. So it's one of those ones where we have to go, yeah, we've got to go get Easy LP. We got to talk to Easy LP, a hit maker. No hit is the same, but they're hits nonetheless. And yeah, I'm glad we had a really, really good conversation with Easy LP, and to understand his history, to understand his mindset. Yeah, some really crazy stories in this one.
And I like he's got some of that humble brag energy. Not too cocky, but he knows what he did, and I respect it. Bro, like,
yeah,
you know when he says none of his beats sound the same? It's the actual truth. It's the actual factual, bruv.
It is true. You think about
it. All sound different. It's not a lie. Like, I think what he's done is particularly remarkable because oftentimes for longevity, producers have to have a sound. You know, Premier has a sound. Pete Rock has a sound.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the Easy LP sound is, if there is one, but it's just quality.
It's quality. It's a high standard of music that you'll get each and every time. So yeah, man, I've really enjoyed that conversation.
Yeah, that was a fun conversation. He's like Mandem. I feel like I've known him for ages.
Yeah. His demeanor is very inviting. Like, it's very chilled.
Definitely.
There's a lot of experience in that. You can see that he has learned a lot from his time in music. And there's a lot of wisdom he can impart to younger producers getting in the game, because he's been through a lot.
Definitely.
You know, he made a lot of hit records, but it wasn't as easy. It wasn't all rosy to begin with. He worked his ass off to get.
And he paid dues. He paid dues.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So this is Easy LP Breaking Atoms podcast. Check it out. It's another special episode of the Breaking Atoms podcast. Today's guest is a legendary producer. He knows all about adversity and coming in the game and people not maybe understanding and seeing his vision. But when they did, he got money. He got a lot of money. He made some classic records. And we're very, very pleased to have the one, the only Easy LP on the Breaking Atoms podcast. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm cool.
I love the name Easy LP. I mean, uh-huh. I love the spelling. It's a very hip-hop spelling, right? But I also just love the name Easy LP. How did you get the name?
From my block. I'm from Soundview. There was another DJ on my block. His name was Easy LG. And I was like, well, why you call yourself Easy LG? I just kind of didn't know why. And I was like, okay, well, Mars was definitely a bite. I was like, I like Easy. It sound better than, you know, just... It just sounded better to me. I was always known as LP on my block, you know, because I used to DJ. So, and then when I started making mixtapes and let's see, I'll say about 91. I started making mixtapes about 1991. I just ran with the name. I just kept it Easy LP, but I was a DJ then. And then when I ran with Lord Finesse and Buck Wild. And when it was time for me to do the transfer over into doing production, I just kept the name, and I said I just ran with the name, and it wasn't a reason to change it. Yeah, but it actually originally kind of from Easy LG, which is he's on radio. His name is LG the Cut Man. Now he changed his name, so you know it's because of him. He was a DJ, like he was like one of the, he wasn't the biggest DJ on my block, but he used to work at the record shop that was across the street from my house. So being he used to work at the record shop, I used to see him DJing and all that. He was real quiet. You know, he wasn't a real talkative dude, but like, you know, he was good on the turntables. He was really good on the turntables. So it was a bite. It was a bite, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I give him his credit. That's where it came from. And then, you know, as I guess as time going on, then it was, I seen Easy Mo B. I was like, Easy Mo B, okay. All right, you know what I'm saying? But it ain't too many easy, so you know what I'm saying? But it's a gang of LPs out here now.
There is a little LPs.
Yeah, Yeah, there's a gang of them, but you know, but whatever.
Hip hop has that. It's funny. There's sometimes a lot of young Lil, a lot of grandmasters back in the day. You know, it has its phases where it's a lot of its influence, right? So there's a lot of paying homage in that respect.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I ran into a lot of that. But I started at a very, very early age. So I was around a lot of different, I was around a lot of older people at like 7, 8. And so like the block where I'm from, I used to carry crates for DJ Lightning Lance. And like, he was like the first one that made a scratch record. There was a Johnny, I think his name was Johnny Soul. It's a hip hop album, and it has Grandmaster Flash is on it, Lance is on it, Ja Rock. It was a whole bunch of different artists on it. So 81 Live Convention, that's the name of the album. So like I ran with him. So you know, he kind of showed me the game with Carriage's Records. I got put up on records, and you know, that's when I started wanting to really, really, really be in the game. So yeah, he was a heavy influence on me at an earlier age, definitely.
Yeah, so from starting as a DJ and then obviously moving into production, obviously we'll talk about Buck Wild and Finesse. But I just, for one second, I'm always interested about people who are DJs then move into production. How did the influence of being a DJ at a time help to inspire or help to shape your production process and just your production in general? DJs are very good at that time to know BPMs, for example, and samples and things like that. So how did it help shape your production process as you got later in your career?
Yeah, it's just the knowledge of records is what made it easier. Like easier, but I mean, you know, of course you got to figure out how to use the machines and all that other stuff. But my knowledge of records was extensive. Like even Get Money. I was playing that record when I was 16. Like when I was 16, 15 years old, that was a record that I played. And once I started getting into producing, like even that particular record, like I was like, yo, I like this beat, man. Let me just try it. Let me just see if it's going to work. And then, you know, when I played it for Big, he was like, yeah, that's the record. I was like, okay. I left out of his house and we all got in the car and it was like, I said, yo, did Big pick that beat? They was like, I think so. I said, all right, well, whatever. We'll see, yo, you know, because like, you know, at the beginning stage of my career was I got a lot of rejection. So it was like, it was different. It's different because, you know, it's kind of hard to be playing beats and you got Buck Wild and Lord Finesse, which was like, oh man, like those are them guys. Like I watch Buck make beats like the Artifacts record, what's that record? Come on, get down. And I'm watching the KRS-One channel live remixes. All of these records that Buck did, I was basically right there with him or in the vicinity or pulling up at his crib and sitting in. He's like, yo, listen to this beat. He hit the play button. I'm like, God damn, you don't stop. And it's like, he was a monster. I was like, Jesus, this guy does not stop making beats. He made more beats than me and Finesse for sure. But Finesse made a lot of beats too. But Buck just would not stop. Like his drive was, it's like, ooh. Yeah, he had a drive. So, you know, I had to step my game up tremendously. Cause it's just when you got all that greatness around you, you can't be lacking. You know. So, you know, like, so, you know, like I said, it was really hard in the beginning to play beats behind them or in between them when they making these great records. I'm watching Buck, he doing the OC album. He's coming with all of these beats. I'm like, yo, and it's like as the album started getting deeper, the album, the you know, when he came to the bottom line or to the like kind of the, almost the absolute end of the album, he came with these joints. Time's Up was one of them. Time's Up was one of them. That might have happened towards the beginning of the album, and it was so good. It was like, yeah, we need to put this out. And then once they got that clearance from Slick Rick and all that, they was like, all right, let's go. Like, but like that was a big record.
To this day.
It was just the records. Yeah, that first OC album was like Born Life. That was like a great album. He's so underrated though. Like so underrated. He should be at the, with at least the top 10, 15. Like he's a great artist. He's a great artist.
He's my favorite rapper.
Yeah, like he's super dope, but he's like underrated for no reason, because he was the one. Like he won. Like he at one point, to me, he was better than Nas at one point. But you know, Nas just kept going. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, I hear you. You talk about Lord Finesse and there's this DITC connection. I did some research and found out you were almost Lord Finesse's official, unofficial driver. Is that correct? Have you got any stories from the days of driving Finesse around?
Yeah, man. It was good times, man. Finesse, I ain't gonna even hold you. Like Finesse was like, he treated us like his kids, but not like sons, but you're like son. Like he just showed us another side to the world and just everything and how he would treat us. He would take us to eat and we would go somewhere. He'd be like, yo, don't worry about that. I got everything. Be good. Just come on, let's go. And he was just like, he's like, his mentorship kind of just taught you how to move. Like, cause we never had mentors like him, like at all. He was really our first mentor. Like, so, but I used to see how he treat Buck, cause you know, Buck got with him first. And then like, I kind of came around and then we just was inseparable for years. 2 years until, you know, everybody got to start doing their own thing. Like, you know, he held our hand as long as he could. But like, once we grasped what we needed to grasp, it was like, yo, you good. Mm.
That's mentorship.
But like, yeah, exactly. It's like, that's the one day I was watching his podcast. He was on live the other day and I didn't even know his mentor was Jazzy J.
Okay.
I was like, oh shit, I didn't know that. It was like, yeah, they said Finesse used to go and get around Jazzy J and be like, yo, man, yo, I'm like one of the dopest rappers, man. You need to work with me. And then Jazzy J was his mentor. I was like, wow. It's like, I didn't even know that.
Mm.
So, you know, so I guess everyone needs mentorship.
Yes, it's very true.
Yeah.
And what he got from Jazzy J, he obviously paid it forward with guys like you and right. Bakba. That's an honorable thing to do, because some people take information and knowledge and keep it for themselves because knowledge is power. But Finesse shared that with you, and I think that's so admirable.
Yeah, like he just showed us. He showed us so much different things. We went, and even with Big L, when you know once Big L was discovered in Rockin' Will. He was in Rockin' Will. It was a mixtape store on 125th Street. So Buck went there and Finesse was over there. And that's where Big L got found. So they found him. And then, you know, the story, then here comes Big L. And so our first session with Big L was, he jumped on a Lord Finesse record called Yes, You May. T-Ray did the beat. And we did the record at DMD Studios. Oh man, that was a night. That was like, that's when it was like, oh yo, L gonna be something. Then you know, he caught his deal at, you know,
Columbia.
But yeah, doing his album was a process. It's like, cause Big L didn't not only like my beats, he just used to reject beats in general. Like he'd be like, dogs, this beat is so fire. Like he'd be like, nah, I don't hear nothing on that. Oh God. Yeah. He was definitely difficult with the picking of the beats, but he got the album made. You know what I'm saying? It was a process, but they got the album made.
Yeah. Before I hand over back to Summit, talk about your relationship with Buckwild as well. Because from what I understand, he was key in terms of starting your production career because he gave you equipment at the very beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had got a lease. He said, go get your Elisa's HR16. He said, Diamond was using that. And he was like, yo, I'm going to give you this 900. I got a 900 from him. And I started with those two pieces of machines. And then as soon as I got a couple of more dollars, then I bought the SV1200 used or whatever. So, yeah, Buck was very influential. He forced it on me, basically. He's like, yeah, it doesn't make no sense for you to be with us every day and not do beats. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I was like, okay. So then I just tried it. It worked.
Yeah.
Shockingly, it worked. Yeah. Shockingly, it worked.
Yeah. Buckwild is one of our favorites. Absolute legend on the production. He never misses.
Nah, he don't. He was just like, and one time we was just going record for record. I was like, God damn it, he came with another record. So, like, I think he came with...
You did a Verses before Verses?
He did. No, it wasn't like a Verses. It was more so a...
Sharpening of the blades.
Yeah, exactly. He was like, he came with Whoa.
Oh, that's a headache.
So when he came with Whoa, I came with Bad Boys Anthem for Shine. It was like, we was kind of going back and forth on different records. It was just like, yeah, all right. I'm just letting you know I got it. And he's like, yeah, I still got it too. Like it wasn't said, but you know, you could tell that we was like, yo, B, I'm gonna give me a record. Like, oh, that's a nice record. All right, I'm gonna get one. Just give me a second. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't we never made it like a competition though. It wasn't.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I've got, mm-hmm. I've got this. You show me what you got, and it's friend. It's
yeah, like I don't have to speak to Buck for 2-3 years, but that's my brother, regardless. Like, you know what I'm saying? And Finesse too. Like, you know, I reached out to Finesse, maybe a month or two ago, maybe even three, and I just was like, yo, man, just, you know, so many people is passing from my era and everything, and it was. I just wanted to tell him thank you, man, because if it wasn't for him, man, shit, I wouldn't even be here today. Because my records, they play, you know, they still play to date, which is good. Like, you know, it's shocking. It's shocking to go in a party and still get to hear your music, you know, because most music doesn't stand don't stand the test of time.
Right,
most of it doesn't. So, you know,
it's a testament to your talent, and then also the mentorship that you mentioned that you went through, right? So having Buck, mm-hmm. having Lord Finesse, being around, you know, talent helps you to raise your own, right? You become a product of your own environment. You start to want to go, right, it's the same thing, the Wu-Tang Clan, right? They sharpen them still. So it's the same. And yeah. speaking of working with greats, you know, you've worked with Foxy, uh-huh. Nas, Shine, I mean, Source uh-huh. Money, the Source Money joint you did uh-huh. with Bleak, you know, crazy,
yeah,
right? You've done some crazy work.
I did that record. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
This is one of those.
So my, I guess my question is, do you, when you're thinking about placements and working with artists, especially back in the day, maybe not so now, were you very conscious to go, mm-hmm. I need to have build a relationship with them, or was it just like, hey, I mess with your music and we'll work? Because you seem to create a lot of great music with said artists, so I'm wondering if there's a relationship there prior that helps to bring out the best.
There were some of them was relationships, some of them just kind of maybe like Wendy Goldstein put me in a studio with like All City.
I like, love that, you know, album, by the way.
Yeah. So like, you know, and then, you know, the Source Money stuff was kind of around that time too. Like me and Source see each other, they'd be like, oh, this is LP, this is Source. It's like, all right, cool. And then he's like, yo, we should just lay some shit down. I'm like, all right, cool. And then we laid a good record down. That record was like, yeah, Source Money. He's a problem too.
He is.
He's great, greatness. Like, and it's like, it'd be like sad, not sad, but you know, like there was just a couple of artists that, man, like they was great. And like everybody fade. It's like, yo, I don't know what the things just fade, right? I guess that's life. That's just, I guess, the way this life is. Even producers, like great producers, and then, you know, they just fade, or I guess they get caught up in a personal life, you know, things, and things change. You know what I'm saying? you can't stay high forever.
No, you can't. You can't. But do you think some of that is just due to just almost luck? You know, sometimes it's just something, it's fate, it's kismet. Sometimes it happens for certain artists and not others. Because me and Chris often talk about, you know, oh, do you remember so-and-so? Or, you know, what if this happened? What if this happened? Sometimes it's circumstances, people's personal life. Sometimes it's just, hey, it's just, I mean, Salam Rumi used to say it, having hit records sometimes isn't as just, it's not easy. Sometimes everything has to align, the stars. Is it more like that?
I think it's that. I think what takes us out of our game is, you know, our personal life. Like, you know, we go get women and we have kids and here come all of these responsibilities. And prior to that, we didn't have those kind of responsibilities. And sometimes those responsibilities weigh a lot. they're too damn heavy. And then you still got everybody that want to be in your pocket and, yo, let me this, let me that, let me this, let me that. It's like, yo, bro, I can't take care of the world, man. Like, I'm not Santa. I'm not Santa Claus. I'm not here to take care of everybody. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, but you want to do it and you probably do overextend yourself. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's at your cost. You know what I'm saying? So you can't, as time went by, I learned I couldn't be there for everybody. So you have to change your habits. You got to change how you move. And, you know, in the music business, you're going to hit a rut. And when you hit that rut, if you didn't have a pillow in that rut, then you're going to be back on the block or you're going to be working for whoever and, you know, figuring it out, you know, the regular man way, which is nothing wrong with that because if there's nothing coming in, you need to make sure there's something coming in on your table. Something is better than nothing. But, you know, you got to learn, you know, everybody is different. Some people learn the easy way. And then there's the other ones that be like, I'm going to sit right here until it comes. And all you're going to do is dig yourself deeper in the hole. Like, and that's not going to work for you because then you might not even be able to pull yourself back up.
True.
But, you know, everybody looks at it differently. And, you know, I hope everybody is doing good and holding it together. And if they're not, you know, getting back on the music train when you've been off of it, it's a lot harder.
I guess it's like the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I can just imagine. Like the gym. Like, yeah, because when I get on that Peloton, I'll be like, oh my God. this Peloton is harder than going to the gym with the trainer.
Yeah.
It is like, and you got all these different trainers on the Peloton, which makes it like, oh, this, let me look at her, Tundi. Tundi, beautiful chick. I love Tundi. So I like, click on her. I'm like, let me see what she got for us today. But then when I got to get off that bike, I'll be like, oh, God. Legs hurting. I'm getting in the bed. I go to take a shower, get in the bed, aching. Wake up the next morning, still aching. And then like, yo, you paid $3,000 for this bike, so you gotta get your money's worth too. You know what I'm saying? So right now I'm like, okay, I'm about like 2,000 some change away from paying it off. Let me pay it off, and then I'll feel even more better. Then, you know, but till then, every day I'm on that bike.
Yeah, I hear you. Talk about Biggie not wanting mm-hmm. Get Money to be a radio single. Is it true that he was like, nah, this ain't going on the radio?
He said, it's an album joint. He was like, nah, LP, this is an album joint. He's like, you ain't cleaning this up? Nah, I ain't cleaning that up. That's an album joint. Okay. It's an album joint. Everybody coming in the studio, like, yo, this shit fire. Yeah, we recorded the record, man. He played it, took the goddamn phone, put it to the speaker, played it for Puff. Puff was like, yo, that's for your next album. That ain't for them. So anyway, it ended up being a single.
A very big single.
Massive.
Yeah. A single that will last the rest of the life.
It's one of those songs where when you hear it, it gives you the same feeling every time you hear it for the first time. It's one of those songs. When you hear that sample kicking, you have the same feeling like that. That's how I feel about it. Every time I hear it, I think about the first time I heard it when I saw the video. It gives me that same feeling, and that's hard to capture. And whether that was intentional or not, that's just sometimes it happens. That's just magic in the air that you big, it's Junior Mafia, it happens. But I feel like that record is crazy. That record is.
How did you feel about? Okay, I'm going to ask a controversial question here because I know the song from top to bottom. I can do Get Money on muscle memory, right?
Okay.
How did you feel about Rich Homie Quan at the show when he messed up Biggie's verse?
He's a nut.
I tell you what I felt. I felt so upset, right? Because he had the look.
Right. I looked at him, I said, but your baby, you don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah, but LP, like when I watched it and I'm like, he had the Coogee jumper. He had the Timberlands. Yeah. So he had the look down. Like, get the verse right.
Yeah, he couldn't do that because he just...
Sometimes nerve kick in. I don't know, like, you know,
yeah,
it's one of those things where, like, we won't necessarily know. It's easy to get the look right because it was Coogee down to the socks, right? He Bigger always said it, right? So sometimes, you know, fear kicks in, a bit of anxiety kicks in, and you mess up, and then you can't really balance it back. You can't get your way up. It's like a boxer when they get hit. Sometimes they've taken a hit and they're trying to stand up, and he just couldn't get back up.
I won't lie to you, bro.
He wasn't even the right man. Yeah, for the job.
That's true.
Like,
that's true.
That was a very prestigious moment. Like he wasn't the right person for the job. Like, you know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, he suffered even more than his career is doing already. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because Rich Homie Quan, shit, when he first came out, he was a great artist.
Yeah. He was a prelude to the, you know, Thug and all of that stuff that's prevalent now that everyone loves. But just going back on Biggie very quickly. Mm-hmm. Who was winning those snapping contests between you, Buck, Big, and Finesse on the phone? And yeah, come on, you got to be who was winning those contests? Who was snapping on who?
Listen, me and Buck was jumping in and out, like, you know, let's say it's double dutch. Me and Buck jump in and out, but that goddamn Finesse and goddamn Big, yo, all night long, 3-4 hours, all night long, snap. It was like, shit, that was like the best times, man. That was the best times. Man, I'm so happy I grew up in that era. Jesus Christ. Like, that was just that era. Yeah.
Okay. Definitely. So Finesse and Big, they were the kings.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Finesse is funny as shit.
But you can tell by his writing style, he's got to be funny.
Finesse is really funny. Yeah. Like when he on that shit, yeah. I don't know now. I don't know if he'd be on it like that. But
I saw Finesse live. He said something on stage that I found hilarious. And he was talking about artists not working on their craft. And he said these add water and mix niggas. And I just thought that was so funny because the way he kept on calling them add water and mix niggas. You know, when you go to the store or the shop, if it's add water and mix, it's easy. He's basically saying, yeah, these add water and mix niggas. And the crowd just started cracking up. And I'm like, yeah, Finesse is He's a comedian, but you had to be to survive those times.
Whatever, big niggas. I'm like, yeah, that's some Finesse shit, yo. Yeah, that's some Finesse shit. I mean, you know, it's like, yo, you know, like, that's just like we talk, you know, this music right here is Chinese food music right now. That's why it don't last. Chinese food don't fill you up. It just gets the job done. It's not good food. You know, so it's what you intaking. Like, you got to intake the right food so you can be full. Chinese food ain't going to do that for you, though.
You need that Styles P juices for life.
you need something a little bit more better than that. That's not good for you. But hey, you learn, you live, you learn, right?
Absolutely. So let's talk about Reef, someone that is a friend, also a friend of the show. Big Beat, Reef, legendary, right? Skills, again, we're going to keep name dropping here. Skills, friend of the show, absolutely OG to us. So talk to us about Reef and your relationship with him and how that helped you open more doors for you.
Well, Reef walked into the... He walked into, I guess we was at... what is the name of that studio? Quad, and he heard, yeah, he quad, and then he heard the big, you know, the Get Money record. He was like, oh man, we got one. He took that shit right into Craig Kahneman's, like, yo, they got a record. So, you know, once that happened, then he was like, okay, you need to work with Artifacts. So I started working with Artifacts. We did two records, Dynamite Soul and oh, I forget the name of the other record. It was on, it was like a two, it was a single, but it was like a double-sided single. So it was Dynamite Soul Part 2 and another record, which I just can't remember. And then did Mad Skills. So this was 94. So we was at the Jack something convention.
Jack the Rapper.
Jack the Rapper, Jack the Rapper.
So, the Artifacts record is Who Am I?
Yeah, Who Am I? Exactly. So he just so happened to be running around with Mad Skills. Like, and even the Mad Skills relationship, Mad Skills had an apartment like on 7th Avenue. It was like a little one bedroom something. That's where he was staying at. We go by his crib, whatever. But we were going to that Jack the Rapper thing. And that's when he battled Supernatural. We was there for that too. Then Bad Boy was outside. Harv Pierre and them was outside holding the signs for Bad Boy, and they was in their boxes. It was like so much stuff going on. I was like, what in the fuck is going on out here? It's like, man, I'm glad I came downtown today. This is a show. Just a whole, yo, that time, it was just so much different shows and different people. And then it was, there was another label, Bandula Records, and they had some artists. They had these artists, and you got to see so much different things at that time. And it was like all coinciding at the same damn time. So it was like we would not miss anything because we went to everything. We went to everything, even going to the country club on 86th Street, Jay-Z and them coming in there, Dame Dash and they popping bottles and Big a slide in on the humdrum. Like, you know, it was just different times and everybody was cool and too. It wasn't all that. Oh, I ain't fucking with him. I'm not messing with that. This, yo, I'm gonna fuck him up when I see him. It wasn't all of that at that time. It was just more about good ass music.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody was still on some chill shit. But you know, things change, I guess, right?
I gotta credit you though. I have to credit you. I was doing my research on you this morning and I totally forgot you produced one of my favorite posse cuts, Unseen World, on the Skills album.
Right.
I never forget when I heard that song, and I think it was Kalonji. He said, first uh-huh. up to make it liver, I catch wreck like drunk drivers, been through many battles and left no survivors. Bring it, I was like, yes, that's me. Those are the kind of songs that shape me, man. You were part of that. I gotta credit you, man.
Yeah, that was a good record. We made that like on a humdrum one day too. He finally played him a bunch of beats, but he finally found a beat he could fuck with, which was that beat. And it was just like, oh man, this is just too damn perfect. It was like them shingling drums. That's the first time I chopped them and I got them exactly how I wanted to do it. And it still don't, even though it sound like shingling, it don't sound like shingling because I did it my way. Like, you know, there's some of these drum beats. It's so hard to get them the way you want it. Like it's another one I've been thinking about for the last 5 days, and I'm trying to figure out how I could get it to sound like something else, but still everybody know what it is. Kind of like what I did with Bloody Money, you know. But like, you know, I like music again, so I think I'm gonna do some beats.
Yeah, we need some more easy LP.
Yeah, I like music again. It's just like, you know, it's music is a process, and then when you've been doing it for so long, it's be like, what can I come up with that's going break through everything that's out here? But it's gonna be this year coming up. I think I'm gonna put out an instrumental album or two, maybe two instrumental albums to kind of start breaking the ice and kind of take it from there. But yeah, definitely. That's what's going to be up next.
Okay, so we got 25 years of mm-hmm. Ghetto Millionaire, a personal favorite mm-hmm. of me and Summit. We when we have our nerd out sessions, that's one of the uh-huh. albums that comes up. So Mike Geronimo, shout out to him, friend of the show. Now we mm-hmm. need to talk about that Ghetto Millionaire and What a Life. Oh, no, sorry, not What a Life, What a Shame.
What a Shame. Yeah, What a Shame. Yeah.
Another perfect record. Produced by Easy LP. Do you have mm-hmm. any memories from working on that album with Royal Flush?
I worked hand in hand on his whole album. I was there for every step of his album. Even on records that I wasn't a part of, I probably was there. Like, he made Iliadi shine. I was there for that. I was up there for probably a good majority of his album besides maybe the LES record and the Beat Miners record. Moving on Your Weak Production, and I think LES did a record on there too.
Worldwide, I think.
Worldwide, yeah. They're probably those only two records I probably wasn't there for, but a lot of the sessions, when we did my records, we did other people's records too, kind of around the same time. And I used to sit with, I like, that was a project that I was all the way around for. Like, I didn't get no executive producer credits or nothing, but I got a good amount of records on his album. Like, and I was the one that put Nori on his album. Like, I put Nori on Nori's on What a Shame, and I put Nori on Ice Down Medallions. That was my call. I was like, he had the beat, he had some verses. I was like, yo, you need to put Poppy on this record. You know what I'm saying? That's Nori, other name Poppy. So, yo, put Poppy on this record, man. This should be right. And Flush was like, you think so? I was like,
wow, yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Good call. Yeah, good call.
Cool.
Yeah.
How come Rotten Apple didn't end up on the album?
David Gruzin wouldn't clear the sample.
Oh, man. I like David Gruzin too, you know. He did, oh, it's a shame. Yeah, he did the Everyday Struggle Biggie sample. That's him.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I thought I could get it through, but no, what the hell's going on over there? But they didn't clear that sample. So then that's why I became a white label. And then we had Nas on it, you know, Nas was on it, which probably would have been another story, but it didn't clear. And it was just like, all right, well, whatever. But it was a great white label, though.
Yeah, definitely.
White label. It was a great white label. But I figured, even though that didn't make it, I knew when I made for Ice Down Medallions, I was going to be good. Like, Ice Down Medallions was like, yeah, that was the shit right there. That was hard.
25 years, though, man.
Yeah, we did that in Chongqing. Ice Down Medallions in Chongqing, yeah.
25 years. Love that album.
Yeah.
Love that album. Bad Boys, the beat. One of Shine's mm-hmm. signature songs. So the beat was originally, correct me if I'm wrong, for Lil' Kim. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I played it for Lil' Kim first.
Okay. So can you tell us, if at all possible, what beats you played for some artists that ended up elsewhere?
Uchi Wally. Shine had Uchi Wally.
Okay.
That was on the same beat loop as Bad Boys Anthem. That was on it. Okay, hold on. It was a DJ in New York. I'm trying to think of his name. Why it's not coming to me now. I mean, it was on this beat tape. That beat tape had a lot of good beats on it. And it had both of those two beats was on that beat tape. But it was other beats on it. That whole beat tape got picked. Like, what it was, I know, like, you know, Uchi Wally, I played for Nori first. He said, nah, I'll fuck with that. It's like, okay, cool. So that was cool. He didn't fuck with it. And then it went to Nas and them, and they fuck with it. Everybody be different, but sometimes it wasn't supposed to land there. So, like, instead of me doing Uchi Wally, I ended up doing with Nori, you know, I ended up doing like Blood Money 3. You see what I'm saying? So just be like, all right, cool. Well, and then I did Blood Money 3, and then I got it replayed. It was replayed, and it was just like, oh man, this shit is even crazier replayed. Like, you know, so it's like sometimes it don't be for them, but when they hear it on somebody else, they'd be like, oh man, yeah. Oh man, you could have been like, you know, I thrive on being different. Like, so that's why it's kind of hard for me to make beats, because I don't want my records to sound like everybody else's. I want it to sound different. You know what I'm saying? Like, different meaning, yeah, different. We are like, you know, you hear these all these records on the radio, and everybody sound like, you know, not even point of, like, this is like, you hear all these rappers now and they sound like Little Baby. But like, nah, I just want Little Baby. I don't want none of you. Like, you understand what I'm saying? But like, you know, that's just how beats are too, is be like everything sound the same. Like even coming from different producers, it'd be sounding the same. So when you get like a producer like 30 Rock, right? And he do the box. That's why they say they stick out like a sore thumb, because it's not like none of them other records that's out. And then you got a good artist on top of it, then it, you know, it makes it work. Like, you understand what I'm saying? So, you know, it's, but a lot of people don't want to be different. They want to fall into the box like everybody else. So that's the problem. And that's why it's the way it is right now. It's like, you know, I mean, it's surviving. It's going to survive. But like a new artist come and he got some different sounding beats, he's probably going to prevail if he got, if the stars align.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good
yeah.
point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of producers and being different, working with G-Dep, mm-hmm. being around the Hitmen, being around Bad Boy, what was that like? Because, I mean, when we talk about hit records, I mean, Special Delivery, God almighty, that I remember buying, I was in India when that came out, and I bought We Invented the Remix from India because I couldn't wait to get home and listen to it. And I played that over and over again on the aeroplane. Mm-hmm. I never told the story. Chris, you don't even know the story. In the headphones, over and over again, Special Delivery, it was crazy. Like, what was that like, making that song, working with G-Dep, and then being around Hitman?
Well, we was in Bad Boy Studio one day, and it was like, yo, this G-Dep, okay. No matter of fact, Black Rob came in. He was like, yo, Rob said to me, he had this world record out. So it's like, yo, man, I need you to give my little man a joint. And I was looking at him like, okay, who is he? He's like, G-Dep. All right, G-Dep. All right, I heard a couple of records on him. We sat in the studio one day, started going through the DAT tape, going through beats. That beat came on. He was like, bring that back again. He brought it back. He started rapping. He had the bars in no time. We just laid it, and then it didn't have no chorus on it. So it was like, okay. We came back to it, got a chorus on it. He did the second verse. So it was like, oh man, we good with this record now. Cause it's like, yo, you know, when you be at Bad Boy, like the hardest thing to do when you go to Bad Boy is come up with a club record. They always want a club record, but when you start making beats in Bad Boy Studio, the club records don't be coming. I couldn't get a club record in there. Like actually doing beats in the studio, never make a club record in there. It's like the vibe is slow. So, you know, if you give them an up-tempo beat, things is different over there. Your record probably gonna stay. Yeah, your record's probably gonna stay. You know, the hardest thing to do is, you know, everybody always, yo, I need a club record, but club records have to be naturally done, not just you just shot for the club, like shot to make a club record. It can't be contrived. But you know, once you don't, once it's not contrived, then you're good. You know, it'd be all right. But like when you go into any situation, especially as a producer, with that kind of pressure, yo, I need a club record. It never goes right.
I wore never. That cassette out just pure that for that song. I'm telling you right now, it was that, and I Need to Go Part Two, mm-hmm. and that was it. I didn't hear nothing else on that album, but I just kept rewinding, stopped playing. I've got the cassette here somewhere. I've been very unprepared.
And the remix wasn't what, an event.
Ghostface, right? Yeah, of course.
Oh my
god,
we invented the remix. Yeah, I met Ghostface maybe about 2 years now, and he was like, yo, what record you did? And I said, not the Special Delivery. He looked at me and said, this Special Delivery? It's like, yeah, you did a good verse on
Catch me by the really pool in my Tony Stark slippers. I was in Miami listening to that, actually.
Yeah. And the funny shit is, like, when the record, I don't know if it was the first record, it had to be the first record. Let's see. I don't know if it was the first or the second record, but I was in Miami and she came on the radio. I was like, oh shit, this record's going to do something. This record is going to do something. It was a great record. It was, but it wasn't, being that it wasn't contrived, it was even better.
you capture the vibe. You capture the vibe. I guess it's like Get Money. It captures that moment where it's just magic, man. It's everything
and it's
aligned.
Simple.
Yes,
it's very simple. I think sometimes.
I believe in simplicity. Simplicity works.
Depth in simplicity sometimes.
Yeah, like, I mean, and it's like the loop is like one bar. The loop is one bar, speed it up. It, you know, but it doesn't sound like anything. Like it didn't sound like anything at that time. Yeah. Definitely. And you couldn't emulate it either.
It's just funny that you say that now, because now I'm thinking about the stuff you've done, even with the mill and all the, like, everything you do mm-hmm. doesn't sound like the, nothing sounds the same, if that makes mm-hmm. it makes sense.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's the key to longevity.
Mad.
That's what I always thought was the key with longevity, was to not make records to sound the same. Like, you know, so like, I'd be intrigued by when people have sounds and it can last as long as it can last, like, you know. But I think that everybody got their own method, you know, and I just kind of just stuck to my own method, you know, and just followed those guidelines. And I felt like, you know, I think I did the best I could. Like, you know, I did the best I could when it was time to make music. I just did the best I could. Like, I don't have no musical, I don't know how to play no pianos. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. So, you know, with my records and my ears just hit differently. That's what I think. You know, they just not normal ears. Like, I look for something that's not the run of the mill. Yeah, not average, not, you know, not heard before. I kind of shoot for stuff that hasn't been done before. So, you know, and, you know, that's definitely a big,
yeah, you come, and you come from that era too. Yeah. So when you were coming up, you know, you talk about 91, but if you go back early, obviously you were listening to music back then. So none of the guys sounded the same then. Right. So Rakim didn't sound like Kane and KRS and Kool Moe Dee and Kaz and, exactly. You know, none of them all sounded the same. Even the DJs, they all had their own flavor and their own originality. And I think sometimes that might, whether we know it or not, that permeates through, you know, what we do. And how when we grow and it shapes us as our identity, that we'd like, I don't want to buy, it's really weird, it's really strange, this is such a stupid thing to say, but I don't like buying trainers or what you guys call sneakers like someone else has got. I gotta buy something different, because I grew up going, we have to buy something different. If I saw someone with a Troop shell top and bottoms, I need to get different ones now. And that was when we grew up in era. Like, everything had to be fresh and different.
Right. And it made all the difference. And then you want somebody to look at it and be like, where did you get those from? Well, yeah, like, you know, that's what you know.
Exactly.
You got
that's what it is. You know, it even goes into if I'm buying a piece of art, like a remaking of the Wu-Tang Clan or Doom or anything, it goes to like, I need to buy something different.
It's become a life mantra just in every area of your life. Just be original. Yeah. I took it into the workplace too. Right. Like when you're coming up with ideas, it's like, okay, you know, the sign at the door says no biting. What can we do that's different or unique or just has something that makes it stand out? At least for me anyway. So it's become a life mantra. Try not to be like anyone else.
Yeah. Mad. It's mad. Wow, it's mad. That's crazy. It's mad. But we, you know, maybe it's a generation thing, you know, maybe it's a generation thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Prodigy. Go ahead.
Prodigy. No, we good. Prodigy.
I want to say talk about Prodigy. Prodigy. One of the greatest MCs of all time. And you worked with him, I would say, during his genius period. So 95 to 2000. Mm-hmm. You did the title track for HNIC. Now, when I heard that with the strings, I'm like, yo. I say, yo. Head nigga in charge. First of all, the title was crazy. Then you gave him that beat. I need to know how you hooked up with Prodigy, those sessions, and how he got that beat.
Jonathan Lighty was the A&R for Mobb Deep from maybe 97, 98 through maybe 01, 02. And they worked hand in hand with each other. So he would get them to come to the studio. He'll sit there, babysit them, you know. And so he hit me one day, was like, yo, just come to the studio. P gonna be in here. Let's play some beats. So I went in there, we did a record that's not out, but it's, you can find it. It's called Gun Love. That's the first record we did. And there's two versions. There's a version with Slick Rick on it. And he's saying, "Don't hurt me again." So we did that record first. Then we did, and then, which is a funny story, because they had to play it at Def Jam, because next thing you know, Montel Jordan had to be. I was just like, this is too fucking ironic. And then, and Montel Jordan's record was, not This Is How We Do It, whatever the next hit record he had after that. But anyway, that was one of the records we did. Then we did, I played him HNIC. And he was like, "I'm fucking with this." So, you know, he did the record on his own. I wasn't there for the session for that. But the Don't Hurt Me Again, the Gun Talk, Gun Love. Gun Love is the other record. And then we did, and a little bit more down the line, then we did Getaway. And Getaway is where I was like, "Oh, I nailed it." Like, you know how you be like, you know, you have a prodigy is one thing, having Marv B is another thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, Marv B, prodigy. Now, I fuck with prodigy, but goddamn it, Marv B, that's something different. That's something different. Like, that was one of my favorite groups, man. When I started doing beats and I had to go to the tunnel and they're playing Shook Ones, I'm like, "Oh my god, this shit is crazy." It's like, yo, they the best artists out. And then, you know, like, then he go to, you know, some years go on, then, you know, I get with Capone and Noriega, and I'm like, "Oh man, well, I probably won't ever be able to get the Mobb Deep, so Capone and Noriega, y'all are gonna be my Mobb Deep." You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, yeah, it was just like, then I started doing a bunch of Queens records, and it was just like, "Oh wow, this is a whole nother world right here." Like, I'm like from the Bronx and I'm doing all these Queens records. You would think I was from Queens, because I did so many records with Queens artists. Good records too, man. Like, good records. But, you know, like, it was my favorite artist. Like, you know, outside of, you know, doing big stuff, and Sean, like, Sean was like, damn, big pass, yo. But listen to his voice. I was, you know, everybody's like, "Yo, he sound like Big." And I was like, damn, what would Big get on, like, right now and kill it? And it was like, that's why that beat went to Kim first. It all came together, though. Definitely all came together, and all the good music came out at the right times.
You are a legend. We love you for all you've contributed to the to the genre, to the culture. We hope to, we can't wait to hear more music from you. You've mm-hmm. definitely, you filled us up with some great stories here. Honestly, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. Definitely. this conversation.
Me too.
This has been too. Great. So we appreciate you. We love you. We respect you. And thank you for your time.
All right. Y'all have a good evening.
Peace once again to Easy LP, legend in the game. Man,
I'm still upset, bro.
Why?
Rich Homie Quan messed up the Get Money verse, man.
Yeah, I was gonna take that out actually, because I didn't want, like, you know, I don't want, like, you know, Easy LP calls him a nut, and I don't want anyone to have problems on our behalf.
It's fine, bro. I remember watching that, and I'm just like, ah. But what a great record, though. Get Money.
Yeah.
Cultural staple.
Absolutely, but he's got some great ones, man. Even like, he's on the Belly soundtrack, everything, man. He's got so much history, and I just love the fact that, you know, he comes through the game with Finesse and Buck Wild.
Yeah, you know, the DITC connection, man. It's just, I swear, it's just everywhere, like, in capacity.
Especially in that era, in that decade period, the music that had come out as a result or affected by the lineage of the DITC crew is unmatched. It's unparalleled.
Imagine Buckwild saying to you, you know what Buckwild does, right?
Yeah.
You should make beats. You're around us. Make beats, man. Go on. Make beats.
Yeah. Right.
Just
right,
do it.
Right.
Do it.
Right. Right.
Go on.
Crazy. Here's some equipment. Do it. Yeah. Mad. Yeah. Mad. But really, respect to EZLP. That was. Yeah.
I would encourage all our listeners as well. Go out and do your Googles. Do your due diligence. Go on Discogs. And check out EZLP's discography. I think he has a long list of hits and classics, some that you'll be familiar with and some that you won't be familiar with. And some you'll be like, oh, he did that?
Well, yes, like Ghostface. Ghostface didn't realize that he did Special Delivery.
Bruv.
You know? Bruv. It's mad. Absolute mad. But yeah, testament to the genius.
And go and listen to Ghetto Millionaire by Royal Flush. Oof. We can't talk about that album enough, and EZLP is a key part of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Talk about that album enough. Classic.
Absolutely. But as always, you can follow us on social media at Break the Atoms, Twitter and Instagram. Chris's personal handle is at I Am Kinetic. Mine's is at Hip Hop Chronicle. We will be back next week with yet another episode. But until then, peace.